We're happy to greet you again this evening under the holy names of God, under the eternal culture of love, and of course as dynamic spiritual warriors. We honor all of you, and we want to continue something similar to last week. We were discussing specific things for you to work with. And since you are in the institution of applied spiritual technology, that should, of course, be the case of things. We don't want to give you something that's just simply sentimental or something that's just theoretical, but something that you can try and monitor the results. So whether you are staff members, whether you're disciples, whether you're visitors, whether you are just curious, then just explore, because wherever there is knowledge, we should try to see how we can use it, or try to see if there is some value for us. As a matter of fact, for instance, in a 10-minute oral discussion, normally a person only is able to retain about 50% of that, and in a day or two, only about 25%. And that's your mind is pretty sharp. And since we want you to make your investigation, to find your truth, and to scrutinize to see how certain things are functional for you, then we ask that you either take some tapes of this particular discussion, or you write some notes, or perhaps do both. But don't just hear without trying to put it to a test. We don't want you to cheat yourself. We don't want to waste your time, and we surely want to give you something to add to the quality of your life. This is quality of life proposition that we're dealing with. So let us start off with a few bold statements. And you're going to put it to a test to see if there's something to it. Before this section is over, we get a little watch to watch closely. We're going to submit to you first five secondary technique considerations that you can use. Let's say then, after that we're going to give you 10 primary considerations. Now, especially these 10, you can use these every single day to evaluate any problem individually or collectively. These 10 primary considerations, you can manage any crisis, you can resolve, or you can clarify any conflict. Whew, it's a pretty bold statement. You see what I want you to write. Take close and don't notice. You can come back later and say, well, hold a minute. I tried it and it didn't work. I tried it and I know for myself that there is some significance in those particular techniques. So these, particularly the last 10, that doesn't matter what individual collective problem that you have, you can find some solace in one of the categories that can resolve that, or that can at least manage that crisis. All right. So first, since we're going to talk about the whole phenomena of spiritual life, detachment, then we have to look at where, and all these questions someone should be having, where does the spiritual end and the material begin? Some of you are having that as a consideration now. Some of you are having the consideration that you're just beginning to come on the path, spiritual path, and so you're trying to get some bearings of how to do things, when to do, why to do. Others have been on the path for a long time, but still, there's some complications in integration. There's some complications in how your spiritual activity is going to pay your mortgage or your rent. There's some complication because you find yourself often in one stream of activity where you're doing something spiritual, and then later you're doing something that seemingly is contradictory to the principles that you're trying to hold on to, trying to develop, trying to cultivate. So how do we get a balance? How do we allow ourselves to be more consistent, more holistic? How do we allow ourselves to function in such a way that we can constantly evaluate our progress and see in a very perceptive sense that there is constant growth? You know, as you become spiritual, you're a new person. You're not the old person anymore. You may change your name, your cultural spiritual name. You are looking at yourself now as you're moving ahead and looking back at some aspect of you that's kind of died, a chapter that's closed. So now, what do you do? For most of the time in this lifetime, you've been that person of the past. And all of a sudden, you're someone else. You're becoming someone else. And the more genuine and serious you are, the more you are trying to come and to grow faster and faster. With great haste, with tremendous haste. So, who are you? What is that identity? And how to unfold with less and less incoherence? You know, now we do things different, huh? Now you're looking at the whole way that you eat, that you dress, that you think differently. You're looking at the educational factor, and one is considering, now should I pursue this? Or if I do pursue, how should I pursue? Taking a different scrutiny of the social factor. In some cases, some of you are wondering, does that mean now I have to maintain being antisociable, or will I become antisociable? Because the people I used to socialize with, the things that we had as a nucleus, I no longer do. And therefore, there isn't much of a relationship anymore. And those are, does it now mean that you have to take another investigation of your political orientation? Does it now mean, and of course it means all those things, because you are a different person. What do we do? How do we function? How do we avoid being schizoid? You know, schizophrenic mentality? Where some people see us as one type of person, others see us as something else, and we know that we're something even different. Some of you are like that, huh? Three different people. You're one person at work, you're one person with your family, your general family, extended family, another person with your immediate family. And some of us are a totally different person by ourselves because we have so few people who can understand and relate to us. How do we make that adjustment? Detachment, the transferring from the material into the spiritual. So are you ready? Look at all the questions and all the headaches and all the problems. That's a part of all of us. So let's see how we're going to resolve some things today, huh? Okay, point number one. This is our secondary. We're going to give you five secondary considerations. We'll try to do it in some system so that it's easy to reflect on. So that when you think of a code word or phrase, you think of some of the conclusions and ideas that are associated with that. So the first one is what you call dovetailing. Dovetailing. Or we can say, same category, replacing something lower with something higher. Now, you can almost understand what that entails. First, we should understand with this proposition that detachment is not necessarily that you have to give up something. We call this paramdhistha nivartite, which simply means that you replace something lower with something higher. You substitute. If you are considering the spiritual life as just rules and rules and regulations, you're in trouble. Because you're not going to be able to have a sense of longevity. Sometimes people think that way. that being spiritual now is you don't do this and you don't do that and you have to eliminate this and you have to stop that. What do you do? Where do you go? How do you experience the higher pleasures? Because there were some pleasures and things you were doing before, even though they were temporary, flickering, but now you want some higher pleasures, so there's some way to attain those things. We should not think and live that way ourselves, or should we emanate that to others? That being spiritual is just rules and rules and regulations and things you don't do, things you have to avoid, even though we gave you a long discussion about that last week about offenses. But we told you those things, and you put it in the background and try to go on and function. Just as somebody likes music. So you don't have to give up liking music or being a musician. But it means that now, instead of playing music that's causing people to engender their lust and their greed and their avariciousness, now you are listening or playing music that has the ability to enhance the consciousness. You don't have to give up eating. You like eating so much. But now you're more careful about what you eat. So now instead of eating pig meat, so now you're eating something live, some raw vegetables and fruits and things. You don't have to stop. You can still fill it up nice. No problem. If you like reading, you don't have to stop reading. You don't have to stop teaching. But it's a matter of now you'll be more careful about what you eat. You'll be more sensitive to what you are taking in. You don't have to stop singing, stop dancing. You don't have to stop associating. No. It's a matter now that you're doing all of these things with the pursuit for enlightenment. And you're a little bit more selective about who you're with and where you go and how you do certain things. So it's not a matter of giving up anything, really. It's really a matter of being more conscientious about the quality of life, the quality of experiences, and literally making a platform so that you can have many, many other higher experiences. So it's really about getting more as you regulate your life to position yourself to be able to receive more. Just as if you have sleep, you're not going to be able to be attentive to whatever you're doing. If you're very tired, you're not going to have a high level of efficiency. If you're very distracted, you're not going to be obviously pinpointed. So you'll get diminishing returns. That's an economic term that means you put so much in, but you get so little back corresponding to what you put in. We're just trying to give you some points of how to put something in and get many times even more back than what you put in. Not the same, not less. That's one. Point two, did some say, well, there are certain things I can dovetail. First point was dovetail and higher taste, or replacing the lower with the higher. And the second is seemingly the opposite, that there are things you can't seemingly dovetail. You have some particular job that there's no way you can make that job spiritual. There's no way you can just make an easy, you know, conversion of a lower music for a higher music, a minimization of this for something else. Then, in that special category, then you have to focus more on how you use the fruits of what you acquire from that particular work. That, mind you, that the work isn't overtly, obviously sinful. You got some job that you are a very active criminal, exploiter, abuser, misuser of your fellow mankind, then there ain't no dovetailing in that, and the fruits of that is just going to be more of what you are involved in. Remember we were telling you a little story of, we'll pause to explain this, of one seer, one sage, who had the ability to know past, present, and future. And so he was evaluating some different people. looking at their present situation, and then giving them some points about the future. So first he saw a prince, and he told the prince, you know, you live as long as you possibly can. And then he met a student who was working real hard, denying himself of all different types of things. And he told the student was pious and ethical. He told him, you know, you can die anytime. It's okay. Anytime you want to die, fine. Then he came in touch with the butcher. He told the butcher, whew, you should neither live or die. And then he met someone who was having some of the kind of knowledge that you're developing, and if you become expert at it, you become transcendental. He met a transcendentalist, and he said, you can either live or you can die, it doesn't matter. Now, what is this stuff all about? Well, the butcher is a case of particular interest for it. The butcher, he told him, neither live or die. That your life now is so sinful that your whole life is about death. Your whole life is so gruesome. You're living in hell now, and your karmic reaction for the things you're doing is catches up on you that you're going to live in hell even more in the future, and the next life, and you're going to have to pay for what you're doing. So if you have that kind of job, there's no dovetailing. Because what you're doing now is very simple, and the result of that is going to give you more complications. The student who is now undergoing some austerity, because it's ethical and moral, right now he wasn't receiving so much benefit, but in the future, so much was waiting because his karma is good. It's like some things we do, we are not experiencing the immediate result, but we are depositing in the bank. And when you deposit in the bank, you don't feel it right away, but later, when you look at your balance, and later you want to draw off that, you're happy because you have some capital to work with. So many times our experiences are like that. We may not immediately see the results of being spiritual, being ethical, being moral. We may even feel that the people who are more exploitative and sinful are the ones who seemingly excel in life. Well, look around the corner and you'll find out that it's not quite that way. As you see, many people under all kinds of complications, very serious. If you could look and see some of their previous activities, you would see why they're in those situations. And many of those who now are receiving certain boons, or boons in the future, and you'll see also some pattern of why now they are being able to experience such auspiciousness because of how the karma has added up. So, of course, the case of the transcendentalist, he was saying, you can either live or die. Now, the student, he said, you can die because when you're in your next life, you're going to get all the credits now. All the deposits are going to come to you. And the one who can live or die, because he was already beyond what his body was dealing with. He was already absorbed in consciousness beyond this particular realm, experiencing love and ecstasy, which we're going to talk about next week, about different types of ecstasies that are beyond any type of experience of happiness, of joy, of satisfaction that you have normally known about. But we're going to try to inform you so you can go for it, get it, and experience it. So, in such case, where one is attuned to such heights, that person is aligned with tremendous flow of realization of happiness and pleasure, even though they may walk amongst us and seemingly like us. So the transcendentalist, he was telling you, can either live or die, because you're already in a state of bliss and ecstasy, and as you leave this body, what is waiting for you is going to be more of the same. So, that point second, about things you can't dovetail, as long as you're not doing something so sinful like the butcher, then there are ways that you just have to be more focused on the results to see that you're using the results in a pious way. So you can tolerate your job like that a little better, huh? That even though it's so hard, so ridiculous, or so much distracting, you're not doing something of social welfare concern, you're not doing something where you can really see that it's making a real mark on society, it's helping people, but it's just putting a little money in your pocket, then you use that money, and you use the results of that in such a way that the results themselves add to upgrading consciousness. Point three. Detachment is not just a matter of avoidance or absence. Sometimes we're thinking that to be spiritual, we have to go and live in the mountains, we have to go in the bush, or we have to separate ourselves from society. We have to undergo all different kinds of rigorous austerity. Not necessarily. Because real detachment is not just to be away from something. In the neophyte stages, we do have to many times eliminate our physical presence from a certain environment. Just as if you are an alcoholic or you're a drug taker, then you know that when you go back to that old neighborhood, you're going to be thrown to engage in the things that you normally do in that environment. And so for a while, you may have to not visit those areas, be with those people, do certain things that will be a catalyst or stimulate you into some lower consciousness. But the strength is not that you avoid. Because if you just avoid it, then as soon as there's an encounter, sometime in the future you may fall back. But to show that you really come over that, you have to at some point, sometime, be able to meet the situation in the face and not succumb. There are many monks, rishis, yogis, who remove themselves from secular environments. They remove themselves from social interaction. And my God, soon as they are now exposed, they fall down, fall apart. So the real test and integration is literally to be around certain things, but not to be affected by it or not to give in to it. Not necessarily not to be affected, because there is, this is esoteric, but there is great strength that comes when you are stimulated by something that may even be negative, but you don't give in to it. Then you acquire some power from being able to be confronted, but not giving in. Not avoiding, not necessarily running away, but not succumbing, not getting in. You know, many, many years ago when I was moving to different places in the world, and I had one service of visiting monasteries in different places in the world, nunneries and then Jesuits, ashrams and Trappist monk places. And it was something very interesting. Because this is, in some cases, a sense of artificialness, and there has to be a balance of integration. Sometimes we visit nunneries, just like in places like Spain or in France or Germany. And many times in these monasteries, they're kind of far away, you know, from the city, and people only see their own kind. And so as soon as someone else comes into the environment, someone from the opposite sex, right? Then it's like all the senses just go wow. You see a man walking through a nunnery, a place that's in a mountain somewhere that people haven't been, and it's practically like the people are ready to just unrobe you. Energy is just so thick, so so heavy. I had a chance to experience that sometimes. Or in some of the monasteries, when you visit some of the priests, and you go to their rooms, and all you see is wall-to-wall paper of pornography. And you wonder, how you celebrate? When you're eating, looking at this, when you're sleeping, looking at this, when you're reading, looking at this. So sometimes you have to have a balance. Or we create some weirdness, or things come out in another way. One recent survey in England is saying that over one-third of the Catholic priests admit about being homosexual. And that's those, of course, who again admit. Because certain things are there, are natural. It's natural for man to procreate. It's natural for the sexes to interact. In some rare cases, someone may try to refrain or abstain, or someone who does that, they have to know the science of integration. Otherwise, you create some very unusual energy that comes out in very unnatural ways. So it's not a matter of running or abstaining, but it's a matter of knowing how to use, or a matter of whether you're going to use the gross or the subtle aspect of that particular energy. Now some of you say, but you know, well, first, before we go into that, you know, a lot of you, when we're talking to the rites of passage, we're mentioning so many things about child care. As you are yourself becoming spiritual, be careful with your children that you don't just tell them, no, don't. You don't just tell them, don't watch television, don't read those books, don't go this place, don't go that place. But sometimes you have to walk them through it. Sometimes you have to turn on something and watch it with them, and then help to explain what is going on. Otherwise, like having a bird in a cage, and once that bird gets a chance to get out, it goes wild. So if you're not careful, even though you have good intentions in trying to help the child, your children, if you don't have a proper sense of balance and integration, then they're just going to be so curious. They're going to feel so denied from certain experiences. And they're going to hate you for it for a while, but at the same time, they're going to experience it anyway with even more zeal, because they're going to think, no, this one I'm not supposed to do. I got to find out why. You got to see what that experience is. And then the rebellious state, the kids will be even more excited to do it because it's a no-no, huh? So if you walk them through it, you carry them through it, you show, explain, not that you have to sit down in the living room and smoke marijuana with your child. Let them understand what the effects of it, huh? And draw a line and do this to them, what you can't do now in the marijuana. No, no. The thing is that you help them at least to understand why not, in a very practical way. Now we talk about the point of, and you'll notice in many of our conversations, discussions, there's always some discussion relationship to male-female roles, because in almost everybody's problems, that's one of the problems that you have, male-female conflict. As a matter of fact, as we go on to the next point, just as you are writing down, I want each of you to write down two or three of your most serious problems. Just write it on the back of your page as the discussion is going on. So that those are the first things that you're going to use these techniques on starting this week. So you can check. Just think of those problems in your life that you feel, those things that are giving you the most disturbance, what you consider to be your number one problem. Now you can write a long list, but just limit it to three. So you can have priorities so that you can actually evaluate and reassess to see your progress, to see how you're dealing with those considerations as we go on. Now, as we talk about this idea of the priests and the yogis and things, some of you may say, but, you know, in one sense, it sounds like we're being a little, what do you call it? Duplicitous or double standard. You know, some of you know my own life, right? You know that I'm celibate for 20 years. And some may think, well, hold on a minute now. There's something wrong. He's trying now to have more social activities for everyone. He says we're kind of put together in a retreat. And 50% of that retreat idea is so you can start meeting each other a little more. As we have the meditation group, the vegetarian cooking class is going to be starting very soon. We want you to learn something from that spiritual. We also want you to have spiritual association. How many times we discussed that there's a need to meet someone similar to yourself as you are having a nucleus of something important and you want to share that with someone? Well, we can look at this in several ways. First way is that we do not recommend for anybody to abstain from sex life. However, we do suggest that you avoid promiscuousness, because the control of sex energy is that same energy that opens up certain channels for you, leads to the ecstasy, leads to the pure devotion, leads to the higher realization. It has a tremendous amount to do with your actual spiritual balance, and how you're able to integrate, control, regulate the sex energy. Celibacy is something extreme and should not in general be tried, not in this particular age. Unless, well, say you take my case, maybe it's a person who cannot be satisfied with one woman, or 10 women, or 100 women. And so therefore, you want to love many, many women. Not lust after many women. There's a difference, huh? It's a different game. But you want to love many, many women. And you want to love many, many men. That's a funny business. But you want to love people. There must be love being exchanged. You must feel love and you must receive love, or you're not human. So in some rare cases, one may be able to, and this is a principle that everyone integrates into their life, is that as you have more and more heart-to-heart loving energy, it also has the way to control the lust. It also has the way to help you to have deeper quality and experiences. And this is why you have to be careful not to play the body game. Because the body game is going to leave you very much on the surface. If you're just looking for a man only because he's handsome, and he's tall, and he has long arms, boy, I got somebody's category right there, huh? Are you looking for a woman, you know, because she's so attractive, and she's like this, and she smiles the right way, you know, and she's just the kind of person you've been dreaming about? You know, every culture is a little bit different, you know? A little different. In America, you play a funny game. Maybe we'll take this off record. Maybe we'll leave it on. You play the game called the booty game. You know, a woman walks down, and the man looks, whoa, look at that one. Huh? Look at the booty on her. Huh? You know, that's not done in every culture, you know. No, it's really not. But here, it's a strong thing, huh? Did you see her? Look at the booty on her. You play the booty game. Well, you know, in China, they play the feet game, huh? Seriously. A woman goes through all kind of austerity, making her feet small. She binds her feet all kind of ways. Because the big feet consider unattractive. And so they literally torture themselves. So they make the feet very small. So the man thinks, look at the feet. The body game, huh? And you know, some cultures, right? Some places, even some of the tribes, we have a woman has a long neck. The woman makes the neck very long. So the man can look at this heel. So much neck is there. Look at the neck. Some place they make the ear, huh? They make the ear, or they make the lip come out. So they put a plate or something in the lip, so the lip comes out, huh? You know what the thoughts are, right? So it's very different. It's relative. But it's all the body game. Even in those cultures where they keep the body so covered that you can't see anything. You can't see the form. You can't see the movement. And the man says, did you see those eyes? There's some women can be all dressed up. Some of our Muslim brothers, they know that. Women can be all dressed up. And she can throw those eyes that make that guy have all kind of fantasies. It's all part of the body game. And we have to be careful, because as we say, the family unit, the male-female relationship, determines the society, that determines the nation. When we are trying to find a partner, and that partner is not spiritual, then we inherently are going to have complications. Even if they're religious, you're going to have complications. Because people hide behind religion. Huh? Sometimes they hide behind religion, and they start giving all kind of orders and dictates, and they use religion, they throw it up in the face, you know. But the Bible says like this, you know, and the Quran says like this, so you know what you have to do. But we have to go even beyond that, the spirituality. Otherwise, we can have tremendous chaotic relationships, even though both parties are professing strong, so singly, to a particular religious tradition. but they're not being spiritual, they're not being selfless in that affair. They're not going to the essence, but just studying with the form. And so they're hiding behind that. If we have a relationship that's just the body game, it's actually animalistic. Because human life begins at the platform of acquiring for self-realization. So if you're just looking in a situation to improve your eating, sleeping, mating, defending, and you're dealing with a partner who's just enhancing his eating, sleeping, mating, defending, or hers, then you don't really have a mate. You are associating still in an animalistic framework. So when there is problems about territorial rights or aggression, when there are so many problems based on just material things, that's what animals are about. You know, some days, sometimes now, people get these pets, and they even dress them very nicely. You know, like the poodles, you know? People, they dress them in all kind of nice clothes. And the poodle goes down, just, you know, wobbling and a little butt. Well, the animal can also be dressed up very nice, but you still got an animal. If you were just looking for a man or woman who's dressed nice, who talks nice, who walks nice, who eats a lot, who has a nice car, who has a lot of money, who has a lot of fame and prestige, you just got a poodle. But he's wagging his butt. You don't have very much. And therefore, from time to time, when it begins to show, then you should understand that that's really what you have. So it's important that we take closer notice. There's a story called Liquid Beauty. It's the story of a gentleman who was so infatuated with this woman's beauty. I mean, he couldn't even hardly breathe when he was around her. He was just so infatuated. But she wanted to teach him a little lesson, huh? So he was saying how he wanted to enjoy her beauty. She told him, well, you know, you come back in a week and you can experience this beauty. Just two of us. So during that week's time, she took some heavy, what do you call it, purgatives. Is that what you call it? Laxatives, you think? And she was throwing up and defecating all over the place. But she saved it. This is a little graphic now. This is a little story, all right? Understand the theme behind it. And she took it and put it all in a bag. A little plastic bag. Big plastic bag. And the man came knocking on the door, huh? Dressed nice, smelling nice, looking nice. With all his fantasies in his mind, he came knocking on the door. And he was asking for, you know, where's the girl? And she was there and opened the door for him. But she was looking so much decimated. And then later she let him know that it's me. And he said, what happened to your beauty? He was anticipating all week long. Being with this beauty queen and what experiences they were going to have. And so he said, what happened to you? She said, I'm the same person. What happened to your beauty? And then she explained to him, come on down the room and I'll show you my beauty. And so you know the rest of the story. So she pulled out this bag and gave it to him. To teach him a lesson. Well, that's a graphic story, of course. But we do have to be careful that we don't attune ourselves in those levels. That we have to go beyond those particular levels. And that's what we can do if we abstain or not abstain. We have to be able to get deeper quality of love. And then we will receive that from others, and we will give that to others. So in our own case, It's still difficult. Some of you are so beautiful on all sides, it's difficult in terms of male-female exchanges. But what happens is that one can experience deeper heart energy, and from that you can draw that heart energy out of others. There's probably not one woman who comes before me I don't fall in love with. Not in love, but in love. Or man. Inasmuch as that you want to appreciate the essence of that being. And especially if that being is spiritual. And as we tell you later about the primary, one of the primary considerations of seeing everyone as an energy of God, then you understand that. We'll be coming to that pretty soon. Otherwise, we miss the point. And we become a little confused about how to dive deeper and deeper and be able to experience more of the Godness now. Not that you have to wait until later, but now. Looking at my time, let us move on to point four, and then five, then we're going to get to the primary thing, which is the real heart of the matter. Point four is controlling the tongue. The tongue is probably the most difficult sense to control. Now, I'm going to change the energy. So sometimes I do things unusual, so I have to tell you so you'll know, because you've got a certain energy, and I have to want to focus some other kind of flavor. So we're going to change the energy. So I'm going to speak in a few different languages, just so we change the energy. We feel embarrassed. We have so many languages. And I took Swahili when I was in Princeton. I wanted to just get some extra requirements. I took Swahili at Rutgers. I never knew I would have a chance to use it, and so I didn't develop it very well. And then, like some of you, we take these courses in French and other languages, and we do textbook learning, but we never really learn the language. So I'm embarrassed. I took Swahili, I took French, I took Spanish, and we, in our own tradition, we do a little Sanskrit and other things, but we know probably no language, not even English, carefully. But I'm going to speak in one or two different languages, just for the purpose of creating a certain energy flow, which is different, because we're going to a whole new phase in our next discussion. First about the tongue, and then I'll translate. Sarirara vijitaja sinjiyaja teka jivetale visayatagare namaje jivayati logamoya sadurmati tagajitara tina samsare krishna varadara boy karimara jiva joy svapritara damadeno baya teyanamavitya kaurara krishna guna gao premina ko chitanya nisai. Now what I said, in summary, is that the body, The senses are like networks of paths that can lead to death. We're not careful. The body is sometimes like a lump of ignorance. And that of all the senses, the tongue is the most difficult to control. If we control the tongue, we automatically control everything in the line with it. We control the mind. We control the belly, we control the genitals. Bhakcho, another language, Sanskrit. Bhakcho vegam manasasvoda vegam jiva vegam udara pasa vegam ekam vegam yobhishate dira sava pritivyam sasrisha. That one who controls the anger or the mind's desire to engage in anger or fear, one who controls the tongue, one who controls the belly, one who controls the genitals, has the ability to empower others, to make guides, to make disciples, to give spiritual energy and upliftment all over the world. This point four of the tongue is so important that if we're careful about what we eat, how we eat, all other senses can become easier controlled. So much starts with the ability of regulation of the tongue. And those who were here before, you know the lecture we gave, the metaphysical points about food preparation, food eating, not just your normal health, holistic things, but some other things. Try to get that taste on those points that will also add to what you are generally knowing about nutrition and other things. We don't have much time to elaborate on that. But the tongue is a very powerful sense to deal with as you make that transcendence from attachment, mind is going to attune to subtle and gross stimulation. So we have to be careful about what we are participating in, what we are being subjected or bombarded. It is going to determine the quality of your mental experience. We have to often treat the mind as if it is a foreigner. At most of our point of evolution now, we have secrets. The mind knows where you're weak. The mind knows how to bring you incoherent and where to try to attack. So we have to see basically the mind now not so much as a friend, but as our most serious enemy. An enemy, you are alert, you are attentive when that enemy is around. You're taking notice about what trick the enemy is going to play this time. And you're trying to evaluate the trick the enemy played last time so that you will not be a product of, again, devastation. So what do? You have to deal with the mind just as if you have a clown who's sitting right next to you 24 hours a day waiting to make you look foolish. Understand? Just as vividly, if a clown is right next to you, looking, watching, being attentive, just trying to see where it's going to cause you to look ridiculous, ludicrous. And therefore, you're on guard. Therefore, you have a healthy paranoia about what things come out of the mind. So the brain itself is phenomenal. The brain has about 13 billion cells, and it can contain 15 billion facts. So there's no computer, there's no machine that can come up in any sense to what the brain, what the mind can actually do. That means it has a lot of data to pull out a lot of tricks. So for now, we have to see it pretty much as an enemy that you have to keep under guard, you have to deal with. So when you are trying to now be detached, and you're trying to be regulated, and the mind starts telling you, but don't you miss those drugs? Don't you miss that flesh? Don't you miss those illicit activities? And you tell the mind, get away! You tell the mind, leave me alone! I know your trick. When the mind starts telling you, you can't do this, you can't do that, you don't have the strength, you don't have the fortitude. After all, many bigger than you have failed. Many bigger than you were not successful. After all, do you really want to go on seeming weird, unusual? Do you want to lose all your so-called friends because you don't do the nonsense with them? When the mind starts telling you that, you tell it, get behind me. Get away. Leave me alone. So therefore, you can separate those nonsense acceptance and thoughts by immediately not considering that it's you, by taking everything that the mind is basically giving you and processing it to see if you are going to accept it or not. Otherwise, you will act upon these things without being aware of how you're being dragged and led in different schemes. And especially those of you who are, how do you say this? Because many times the thoughts you are dealing with are not even your own thoughts, but are negative projections entering into your mental space just to trip you up, just to confuse you, just to put you in anxiety, just to interfere with your spiritual growth. And that there are more and more people who are becoming mentalists who have the ability how to enter into your mental space and to cause you disturbances and to make you think that it is your thought. And then you accept it and you act upon it, and then it gives you problems. But when you are qualifying the thoughts that come to you, then you can have more sense of discrimination. Many times when you're having these quick mood changes, it is a mood change because it is a trespassing affair that's going on. Sometimes you have these quick mood changes. It's not coming from just within you, but it's coming from outside, and now you are accepting or you are having to deal with it. So the mind has a big effect on what your quality and how you deal with all of these situations. Now let's move quick to the primary consideration. But just keep those things in mind of the five secondaries. Dovetailing and developing a higher taste, replacing the lower taste, number one. Number two is things you can't dovetail, that you look at how to use the food, so the results of those things in a pious way. And things that don't fit in any of those categories, you have to eliminate. It's like the activity of the butcher. Three, detachment is not necessarily avoidance or abstention, but it's a matter of being able to be integrated or to be around certain things but not affected by it. And then we gave you some nice little stories just to try to enhance the quality of appreciation. Some of the male-female sexual activity stories, elaboration. And then, of course, the information about the tongue, and last, about the mind. Now, these next 10 things we're going to give you, we want you, if you feel the desire, every day you use it as a checklist. And you can put any conflict, any crisis, you can have some crisis management by using one of these particular techniques, or many of them together. There is no problem that will not fit into one of these categories. Now you got to put it to a test so you can prove it for yourself. Now, we're not just trying to speak in some bold way, because we ourselves have no right to make such statements. The knowledge we're giving you, although we're wording in such a way to make it more contemporary, we're wording in such a way so that it's more palatable for you, but the knowledge of the platform we're giving you is referred to Evam Parampara Pratam Imam Rajasayoga Sakalena Mahatma Yoga Nashka Parantapra. There's certain knowledge that comes from other dimensions, other universes, from the spiritual kingdom even, and is literally imported into this particular universe, or is imported into this particular secular, material, limited, relative, transitory environment. So, many of the things we're going to mention, of these 10, you have heard in some of your New Age groups, some of your spiritual investigations, you've heard some pieces and parts of it, and a lot of it you've heard in discussions that I've had with many of you individually. And many of you who are counselors and facilitators, if you also keep some of this in your mind, you can use it as you're trying to deal with other people's problems as well as your own. And so we will word it in such a way, because certain souls who have some of this kind of knowledge, is writing about it, speaking about it, have also stumbled upon it or been connected with it from some transcendental source that they may not always been consciously aware of. We're going to put it in a certain format so you can have it in a checklist. The first one of the primary, it sounds almost crazy. It's the so what if, and what for. You say that again. So what of it, and what for. Keep in mind your own problem, or problems that may come about for you, or other problems that people may have. This category is that you consider whatever you're dealing with, whatever you're thinking, and you carry it to the max. So you want to be beautiful, then you think, well, what if I was the most beautiful woman on the entire, Washington, and the entire planet even? So what? You want money, you want to be rich, you want to be famous. What if you were the most famous person on this continent, on this planet? What for? So what? You want to be intelligent? You want to have 20 PhD degrees? No problem. But, so what? In other words, there's a category, you can take anything that you are pursuing and struggling for, and you have to then put it to a test and think, what if I acquired that to its maximum? Would I really be happy then? Is that the goal of life? That's the first category, the primary. So what? What of it? What for? This is the way you can process a lot of desires, a lot of things. You can take them to the maximum and see, is that what you really want? Will it really give you happiness? Is it really going to solve all those problems for you that you've been anticipating? I just got to have all this money. If you got all the money, then are you really going to feel that you have arrived? So what? What for? What is it? Number two, that you are not this body. You have a body. You have a mind. You have an intelligence. You have a car. You have a job. You have a friend. You have a profession. You are not the car. You are not the intelligence. You are not the mind. You are even not the senses. But you are using these things. And therefore, when you become overly obsessed by your car, somebody bumps, whoa, you hit me! Right? You lose all sense of equilibrium. Somebody says something about your looks, about your intelligence, and you go crazy. You're not the mind. You're not the intelligence. If they want to think that you're the body, if they want to think you're the mind, that's their problem, not yours. Don't take it as yours. Don't accept it, and you don't have to deal with it. Don't accept it, and you don't have to work over time making some adjustments for something that you're really not anyway. You keep body, mind, and soul together. Obviously, you've got to take care of yourself. But you're not that. You're using that. So many of your problems are caught up, as we were discussing earlier in a rather dramatic way, in the body game. So you're not the body. So, especially the three or two major problems you wrote down on the back of the paper, as we're going through this list, you see what categories that problem, that crisis could be managed a little better, or perhaps even resolved through one of these techniques. Next is looking at the other, and see the body thing, you know, we've had all these discussions about karma and about life after death that give you more emphasis about how you're not the body. We're kind of using one lecture to add to another because there's so much information we're trying to let you process. So if you need more information on that, about life after death, about reincarnation, about the nature of the soul, what happens at the time of death, all these things, then try to do some backtracking and look at the lecture on transmigration. Understand more about who you are and what is your real essence. Now, the third one, if we are counting right, is the other party viewpoint. Many times, as we're making, trying to become detached from some difficulties, we're trying now to integrate into becoming more spiritual, make the transition, or we're trying to deal with certain problems. We often just only tune into ourselves. What we see, how we feel, what we want, what we need. Especially in conflict. You have to sometimes try to remove yourself and put yourself in the position of the other person. And a way to do that, in a very clear and organized sense, is to write a letter to you giving the other person's argument, or looking at what the other person's polarity is, trying to now convince you, but you're convincing yourself through writing about what the other person is trying to convince you of. Does that make any sense? Does that go a little more? In other words, there's two people, A and B, huh? You're A, and you have a certain point, and B has a certain point. You're going to act for a while as if you are B. And you're going to try to convince yourself of the things that B is saying and doing. You're going to write in such a way as if you're trying to convince yourself using the other person's polarity. Many times you'll get an amazing, amazing insight and to be able to understand better why someone said something, did something, behaved in a certain way. And now you become more holy because you have now your perception as well as theirs. And especially if it's a serious relationship, you want to experience some better integration. And so therefore, you do that. Now this writing technique can be used with all of these considerations. Because writing has a way to bring out more subtle aspects of thought, and has a way to kind of challenge you to do or to be able to evaluate and to reassess the situation a lot better. So that is the other party's viewpoint. Just put these things as you look at your problems, as you're constant, as you're dealing from day-to-day affairs. Number four is see God everywhere and in everything. That allows you that if somebody you don't like, somebody you have trouble with, or someone who you care about, by you addressing, and this is mystical, this is esoteric, you just try it. You lecture or you speak to someone and don't even envision or visualize that person's body or that person as a sectarian individual who has this name, who is of this race or this group or this gender. But in your consciousness, you try to think and address that person as if you are literally having contact with an energy of God. And you will be amazed at what you will be able to share and to give that particular person. And it's not far from the truth, because we're all part and parcel of the Supreme. Mame Vamso Jivaloke Jiva Bhutasana Manasasani Indriani Prakriti Sani Karsati. So that it goes to the soul and not to the mind. That we're all part and parcel. We are like, same as the Lord in quality, but different in quantity. There's an aspect of God in everyone's heart. So you can communicate with that and get reciprocation by you thinking, interacting with people in the mood that you are associating with the Godhead or part of the Godhead. Then what will happen is that all around you, you begin to experience more Godness. All around you, you get more God-conscious stimulation, motivation. Because constantly you'll be surrounded with more of that higher energy, more of the essence. You experience that more from others, and you'll be able to give that more to others. Even someone is thinking very bad about you, then you meet that lower energy with a divine energy. And you still look at that person as the God who is testing you to see how you're going to maintain yourself. Who's testing you to see how you're going to perform. Because without a test, there is no certification. There is no graduation. There is no success without the chance to also to fail. So when you have that opportunity, you thank that person, oh, how wonderful you are giving me that test. Just where it hurts, but I'm going to pass it this time. Sometimes it happens, huh? Somebody just confronts you with just what you don't want to see, what you don't want to hear, what you don't want to experience. Then don't take it as just something much. But consider that it's become a part of your life space, and God, merciful Mother, Father, God is all loving and concerned about you, so therefore for something to come as part of your environment is for some type of growth experience. And that leads us into point five, is that everything has a purpose. It's a natural transgression. There are no accidents in the universe. We see something as an accident because we didn't have full grasp or control in terms of the immediate situation. But not that there's an accident, not that the universe itself is actually an accident, even though the scientists want to tell us that, some of them, that the whole universe has started from an accident. And it's created all this wonderful organization. Just a few days ago, my mantra, in Minnesota, it just brought forth a child. And so many of those in the house were there to witness. He himself was there. And it's just amazing to see, because I was not there, but I heard about it. But it's amazing that in one moment the baby is here, and the next moment the baby is out. Huh? With all the form and the beauty and everything is there, huh? All the senses and everything for growing to becoming an adult. And they say that things are going on by accident. That this, or when we talk about the brain or about the heart, how the heart can pump so many thousands and thousands of quarts of blood just in a day's time, all of these things. So obviously there's some order to it. And the same Supreme that made all of that arrangement has additional order for us as we become tuned to the harmony, as we become followers of the laws rather than law breakers. So if we see that everything has a purpose, then how does that help us? That helps us, and some of you begin to notice that many of the things we're talking about now are things that I've addressed some of you individually in terms of your own problems. So now you have these keys yourself to run with, to use. You don't have to ever go to see a counselor again? Have to ever go see a psychiatrist, a psychotherapist? Huh? No, you see people, obviously, as they can be a mirror for you. But you have some of your own tools and techniques. Because also when you interact with people, especially if it's a scriptless, it's not always so important about the articulation, but it's also the aura contact. So sometimes we say something to you and it doesn't even matter whether you heard, understood, or whatever. But there's an aura contact that can take place that then can give you a sense of strength, a sense of realization, a sense of encouragement, a sense of ability to move on. And some of you have experienced that, as you've noticed that. So what happens then is that as you, since we are interested in talking to all of you in terms of masters, advisors, and counselors, these are not lectures, introductory lectures. They're not really lectures for those who are making a question whether to be spiritual or not. These are lectures for people who should have and will have the ability to go out and to reach the masses or thousands of people. We give them special techniques that are a little bit esoteric, but very universal, very eclectic, that touches various disciplines, various religions, and integration of mind, body, and soul. And that's why we're asking you to put them to a test and to see, because they are of a transcendental connection. So as we see that everything has a purpose, then the major thing that comes in our mind is, what am I to learn from this experience? It has come before me, and it's no accident, so now, what am I to learn from this? Now you see the beauty of what happened. Something that was seemingly negative is no longer negative, because it has become a catalyst for something higher to come out. If it's nothing more than just knowledge, which is also very powerful. Something that's happened that's been a little bit depressing, that's been disturbing, now you're using that to make it positive. You're going to see what you can learn, what growth experience is there for you, what kind of maturation, because for some reason it has come as a part of your experience. And that was not an accident. And the universe and the Lord is loving, and so there is some significant reason why it's happened to you and not to someone else. Then you go forward to try to find out. You take inventory to see, now I'm going to use this. And therefore your whole life becomes positive, because the negative becomes positive, and the positive becomes even more positive, because that is positive you tune into. And you are looking at it in a mood of humility, not thinking you deserved it, but feeling that merciful Mother Father God has bestowed so much beyond your merit, and then you are already positioning yourself for more. So the negative you make positive, and the positive you feel unworthy, but happy that it came, and ready to use it, ready to be more worthy of what is now around the corner to come more. Because if you use what you have properly, inevitably the Supreme will give you more. If you don't, then gradually it may even be taken away. But to move a little faster, a little more time. Number six is accountability. You evolve all of these yourself with compressing a lot of information and in short discretion. You see how that grades nicely from the previous two. Accountability means that you take more consideration and cognizance that everything that you do, you are being monitored. You are being watched. Whoo! That's something, huh? You know what you were doing yesterday and last week? You were being watched. It is part of your eternal record. The good side of that, you were doing something that you were proud of, that you are not embarrassed by. We can function in such a way as if the Godhead is watching us. When we have some incoherence about what to do, then we should think, if somehow the Supreme was manifested in front of me now, would the Supreme Personality be pleased about what I'm thinking, what I'm doing, or what I'm about to do? That's a tremendous barometer to be able to bring a proper check and balance. If you can say yes, an exhilarated and enthusiastic way, go for it. And if you got a big question, you better do some more homework. And if you know it's wrong, then know that you're going to be checked out. It may not come immediately, but it's going to come at some point. Because that is the way of the law of karma. Now the beauty in that is that sometimes when you feel that you are alone and nobody cares, and boy, sound like a Christian minister, like and sometimes when you're thinking that nobody knows how much you are suffering, that somebody does, and they care. And sometimes you begin to wonder if what you're doing, if it really has any real longevity. What is the result of this? Nobody seems to encourage me. Nobody seems to care. Nobody seems to even notice. And here I am suffering so much. I can barely get up in the morning. I can't even hardly eat. I can't hardly sleep. I'm even contemplating suicide. I'm thinking, what is the value of my life when it seems that I'm simply a distraction, a disturbance to myself and to others? And look, it hurts. Said these things. Well, now we can reflect back on how we were being watched, how we were being loved, and to the degree that we had a big challenge, but we did not give in, then we are that much more successful because now we have really passed a serious test. So the more difficult that test was, but you did not give in, the more serious that confrontation was, but you did not succumb, then you have that much more, beloved, in your bank account. That's yours. That's part of your eternal balance. And at some point, it's going to be usable for you in a way that you will later look back and you'll actually realize that it wasn't so bad after all. While we're going through those problems, it seems like they're never going to end. But when we are through, later we can look back and we can realize that it wasn't actually so bad. So just keep in mind that when you are, especially at those crossroads or in those times that you're really having to work out certain things, and it's very taxing, that you are not alone, that you are accountable, you are being watched, you are being loved. The opposite of that, if you're doing something wrong, then you may temporarily seem to get away, or you may be surreptitious and be able to not be noticed in the secular sense. But in the metaphysical, spiritual sense, you are being noticed. The last three is, see, some of you have been reading some of the metaphysical books. You've heard this term. This has been thrown around a lot, and it's actually brought from some higher scheme of reality. To see every action as a call for help, or a call and or sharing of love. That means if someone is being obnoxious, of course it's painful if you have to experience the the receiving side of that. But see the act as a call for help, as a plea for love. Every action, accept it as help or love. Someone is needing some help, and they may be experiencing it, expressing it in a very perverted, unusual way. It may come out in the form of aggression, it may come out in the form of anger, it may come out in the form of fear, it may come out in the form of harassment, but see it, that really, the person is calling for help. And instead of you reacting on the same level, or even in a lower level, even than the person, try to align and see what is being said, what is being done, how can I help? There's an alarm that's going off. How can I help? And then see what loving action, what loving thought, what thought rather, what loving arrangements that you can make. And it's imperative, especially if it's someone that you have to deal with, then they're going to make your life miserable unless you can help upgrade their life. It's like if you're in a house and somebody's, you know, very lazy, they just throw their clothes, they throw their books, they throw everything all over the room, but you're in that same house. You also have to step over the clothes, and you have to step over this, and you have to sit down in the food that's left or that was spilled in the chair. So what you do then is for everybody. Therefore, you want to do your best to help that person because you are helping yourself. And especially, you never know when you are going to need that help. And if you are trying to do your best, the universe will arrange that you will get help when you need it the most also. So each action, all your problems you have with this person, that person, with yourself, and others, as you're confident, as you're guiding people, try to be sensitive to, now, where is the call for help? What way is it being manifested? And how can I show some love? How can I do my particular part? And next is very similar. See yourself, number 8, as love in action here. That means visualize vividly, dramatize that you are moving about, and this is dynamite. It's about ready to blow up. That you are love in action, ready to make a contact, ready to have an explosion. Literally, creating a tremendous flame of loving connections and exchanges. So see yourself as an agent. It says you have some secret mission. You've been commissioned. You've been literally commissioned to go about and to contaminate everyone with loving energy. So you're waiting for an opportunity of how you can spread that love. And if you visualize, you dramatize that, you feel it, leave it in all of your pores, then people are going to constantly notice that when they're around you, somehow you just make them feel good. And when they're around you, that they feel positive about life. That when they are around you, they just feel so much refreshed. This is if they just took a nice shower. Because you will be injecting them with some higher consideration. In environments where they're constantly being drained, you will be a giver rather than being a vampire in association. You are love in action here. Our last two, very similar as we begin to end so we can have a few questions. Move a little fast, but I think you still are able to get the basic content of this. We don't want to overload you. We kind of overload you with most of these discussions, but there's not a whole lot of time. And many of the problems that we have, they're already choking us. We're suffocating from those problems. And the problems the world is facing, they're not waiting for us to learn how to deal with them. You see, our leaders, world leaders, are being assassinated. Every week, Packer, you're going to find about another scam happening someplace. People having less and less faith in anything. And that creates more and more morbidness, dismal consciousness. And that creates more aggregate confusion throughout the ethers of the atmosphere. And that allows every person to become more bombarded by negative things. So, little time is there. And that is why some of these kind of discussions are being made available to you. And on that note, we end with our last two. Number 9, you check your notes, I think, is what is called near death. The near death technology. This is to bring life. But these last two deal with the death conception. Near death simply means, to dramatize it, you consider that if you had just heard from your doctor that you have 2 months to live because you have cancer or some other serious chronic ailment. Now, if you were told that, and just visualize or consider that that's what you're accepting is your case. So many things in your life you would see differently. You would deal with them differently. You would begin to get a better sense now of what is really important. You would have a better sense of priority. Certain things you would even eliminate from your environment, from your actions, from even your thoughts. And other things you would put so much more energy into them like never before. But beloved, those things that would be number one priority, those are the things that are important for you. Those are the things that you have to give more time to. Those are the things that you have to adjust your life now. Because we never know when we are going to leave these bodies. And we do have to have some sense of priority, some sense of planning. There's an African proverb that says that if you do not know where you are going, any road will take you there. So if we don't know where we're going and what we're doing, it doesn't matter. We say in Sanskrit, yatta matta tatta patta. Anything goes, it's all relative. But if we have some sense of intensity, we have some goals, we have some priorities, then we can constantly check to reassess, to take inventory, to evaluate, to see how close we're coming to that, in order to see how far we're moving away. Animal life is just instinctive. We just do things based on the pushes, on the urges. But human life means regulation. And as we said, especially regulating the mind. Manamava madhakto madhiti mandamaskaru. We've got a little bit more Sanskrit because we're trying to reach you on many different levels by this kind of discussion. Translation is just that the mind is always going to be active, and if we somehow can put the mind in higher things or keep the mind in meditating on the Lord, then that mind will become surcharged, purified. And we'll get a better sense of how to adjust our priorities. So nine, we consider that we are confronted with the realization that we're going to leave these bodies. And now we are looking at our life very seriously. Now the very last one, this puts more energy to that, and is again like a platform that we can base many of the other things that we have mentioned. Because the life-death consideration really puts before us, really to take a close investigation of who we are, what we are, what we're trying to accomplish. It puts a sandwich between the first thing that we're discussing about so what of it, and what for. It allows us to understand more about the secondary considerations also. And this last one is that it's called, for simplicity, we call it a second chance. A second chance. In this case, you just dramatize that you have already left the physical body. You have already left the physical body. You've made your transition, but somehow you're able to look back at who you were and what you were doing and your association. And through your mystic power, your mental energy, through your astral body, you're able to influence what is going on the three-dimensional physical plane for a while. As you're able to do that, you look at your life now, and there'll be certain things that you would now be thinking, I wish I would have completed that. I wish I would have did this differently. I wish that I would have shown some love for that person. You know, that happens a lot. The time of death, somebody leaves or you leave. Someone has left now, has made their, transition, and you're thinking, oh, you know, that was my sister, that was my mother, that was my brother. I mean, how many times I had a chance to show some love and I didn't? How many times I had a chance to experience some deeper association, but I did not take advantage of it? How many opportunities there were for me when I could have made some other type of adjustment, but I didn't? Well, we visualize that situation, that scenario, and think of the things that you know you need to make some improvement on. Beloved, do those things now. Make that your priority now, today, as you try to work out all of your various problems. So in summary, what did we give you as we conclude? We first mentioned about the fact that this discussion is about detachment. Detachment, obviously, is not being free of something, but you know what to attach to. There are many questions we started off with that many of you have and should have. Questions how to integrate the material and the spiritual. Questions of where the spiritual ends and the material begins. Questions in relationship to the educational, to the political, to the cultural, to the sociological aspect. What do you do now that you're trying to become more of a spiritual being? How do you do it? When do you do it? We brought secondary considerations. We talked about dovetailing. We won't go over those secondary because we did already, but you have it in your notes. But all of those were setting the stage for the primary. And you can check and see, go through those things, what those are. And the primary, we said that you can use these every single day. Put on your wall. Just put the short phrase that reminds you of the category. So that as you're working in continence, as you're dealing with your problem, as you're trying to improve the quality of your life, as you're dealing with conflict or crisis management, that you try to see which of these areas you can get some solace, some guidance, some resolution from. And if you put these things to the test, then we can guarantee that it will make a tremendous difference in your growth, and the speed of your unfoldment, and the amount of help that you receive from the angelic host, and the amount of realization you begin to acquire from the Lord in the heart, and in your ability to gradually come to a point where one day you will not be a prisoner of this world anymore. That if you come to this world, you will come simply as